I have yet to see one manufacturer's instruction that gives you any information on how to clean an implant that has come in contact with any blood or body fluids. As a matter of fact, they specifically recommend against it. They will tell you that if it even comes near any type of blood, that it should be discarded. So that becomes a big issue. We have blood on it, and the manufacturer is not giving us any cleaning instructions, is not giving us any sterilization instructions if it's been in contact with blood or body fluids. So now what do we do?
Millions of patients undergo surgical procedures every single day. Working behind the scenes are the technicians who go largely unknown, even to the patients whose lives are so dramatically impacted by their work. This is Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing. Join us as we explore this hidden world and introduce you to the unsung heroes driving the advancement of our profession. And now, your hosts, Hank Balch, Justin Poulin, and Michael Matthews. Beyond Clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Nancy Chobin, President and CEO of Sterile Processing University, LLC. Nancy is retired from her position as the Vice President of Sterile Processing Services at Barnabas Health in West Orange, New Jersey, where she was employed from 1990 to July of 2015. She served as a liaison for Joint Commission, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, and the New Jersey State Department of Health Surveys. Her company provides sterile processing consulting services related to the design of SPD departments, policies and procedures, compliance with regulatory standards, on-site training, competency assessments, and educational programs such as her SPD management courses. She has consulted to over 260 hospitals, medical device manufacturers, legal firms, and healthcare systems and surgery centers, and medical and dental practices all throughout the U.S. Nancy is a renowned international and national speaker and is the founder and past executive director of the Certification Board for Sterile Processing and Distribution, Incorporated. Finally, she has received many awards in the field of sterile processing and was recently recognized as the 2018 recipient of the AMI Standards Developer Award. And this will be Nancy's second appearance on Beyond Clean, but technically her third episode because her first one was broken into two parts. Just about a year ago, Mike, she did an amazing job and she really is renowned in the industry. And we're really happy to have her back on the show today to talk about something that I don't think a lot of people have really discussed, at least not out in the open in the industry.
You know, Justin, this is one of those topics that comes up regularly anytime we interact, you know, and talk to those frontliners, because this is usually, I mean, I'm going to venture a guess and say in most facilities, this is kind of a regular occurrence that we get these contaminated, gross explants, stuff that had come out of people's bodies. And immediately you get a call from Decontam that says, hey, what in the world am I supposed to do with this? And so this is a really common topic, and I'm very much looking forward to hearing her input on this.
All right. Well, before we get started, we have an important announcement for all you listeners as we close out season four. Just last week, we launched the Beyond Clean Sterile Processing Recruitment Center. So are you looking for your next big sterile processing career move? Or maybe you're trying to find that diamond manager in the rough who has both SPD experience, credentials, and also willing to move. Through our new Beyond Clean Sterile Processing Recruitment Center, we tap into the most active social media network in our industry to connect job seekers with potential employers through curated job postings and a weekly email distribution that reaches over 15,000 sterile processing professionals and a social media reach that gets to over 250,000 every single month. You'll be able to find us at beyondclean.net/jobs. And we have a featured job posting for this inaugural week. Catholic Health Initiatives has openings for a sterile processing technician in Chattanooga, Tennessee for both full-time evenings and nights, and it's got a sign-on bonus. And Mike, you can vouch for Chattanooga, Tennessee, because I know you absolutely love that city.
Yeah, I've been there a couple of times. I really like that place, and I can tell you, that if you like mountains, forest, hiking, anything nature related, you know, this is a great place to be. It's a beautiful city. And the big thing that I always think about when I think about Chattanooga is it has a restaurant there downtown that has some of the best fried chicken I've ever had in my life. And I will say it has the best mac and cheese you will ever have, called the Public House. I promise you, if you check it out, you will want to move to Chattanooga, no doubt.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and to directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
Beyond Clean. Joining us now is Nancy Chobin, president of Sterile Processing University, LLC. And this is a topic that I think we've been needing to have on Beyond Clean for quite a while. There's a Netflix film that talks about thoughts on this topic, but insights on explant reprocessing. And Nancy, quite frankly, I'm surprised we didn't talk about this the last time we had you on.
I know.
This is a really important topic, and I think maybe at first we should just define what qualifies and does not qualify as an explant.
Okay, well, I always get my information from the Food and Drug Administration because they regulate medical devices. And the FDA says that medical implants are devices or tissues that are placed inside or on the surface of the body. They further state that many implants are prosthetics intended to replace missing body parts. Other implants can deliver medication, monitor body functions, or provide support to organs and tissues. They also state that some implants are made from skin, bone, or other body tissues, and others are made from metal, plastic, ceramic, or other materials. And I'm an expert on that because I have a bunch of them in my body. Implants can be placed permanently or they can be removed once they are no longer needed. For example, stents or hip implants are intended to be permanent, but chemotherapy ports or screws to repair broken bones can be removed when they no longer needed. On the FDA webpage, if you put in the word implant, all of this comes up, and that is used as the basis to help you get information on how you're going to handle explants.
And now with that background, obviously the explant issue, or I guess we could say having an explant policy it matters then, because if these implants have been manufactured a certain way and especially validated for a certain use, if they're not being reused, there's still issues related to policy. So I guess could you speak to the importance and the reason for having a policy even if the implant itself is not being reused in the same way that it was the first time?
There's a couple of things. We first have to understand what an implant is. We talked about the FDA definition, but they further say that an implant is a device that's placed into a surgically or naturally formed cavity of the human body and is intended to remain there for at least 30 days or more. In order to protect public health, the FDA may determine that devices placed in subjects for shorter periods are also implants. So a gray area is like your K-wires, because sometimes they could remain in the individual for less than 30 days. We, in our facility, once we did our implant policy, we considered them an implant. We wanted to err on the side of caution, and so we made sure that our K-wires were always processed with a biological. So we had to define an implant, and we had to define what an explant was. But to go back to your question, how did this all get started? Well, when I was the vice president of sterile processing for the Barnabas Health System, I would constantly be called by the sterile processing managers that they were being asked by the operating room to take screws and plates that were removed from patients, and the patients wanted to take them home. So they would, the operating room would send them down to sterile processing, and sterile processing, being good little soldiers, would clean them and sterilize them and give them back to the OR. And when I found out this was happening, I said, no, we cannot do this. And of course, everybody said, why? And so I had to go back to looking at how this all got started. I started with our health department in the state of New Jersey. We're very fortunate that we have a health department with kind of like an open door policy. And so we're able to call them and bounce things off of them. I mentioned to them that, you know, I had real concerns with this. And they said, well, technically and legally, the patient bought the implant and they are entitled to get it back. And that really shocked me. I had no idea that that was the case, but it makes sense. I mean, if I paid for something and I want it back, you should be able to give it to me. But then the issue becomes liability. Liability is, how do we make this safe for the patient? Now, even if an implant isn't reused, the implant comes in contact with blood and or body fluids. Sometimes it's not even going into the patient. Sometimes in the operating room, unfortunately, they don't use the little, I call them tweezers, that are available so that they can pick up the screws and measure them and make sure it's the right screw before they put it in the patient. But very often they don't do that. They just use their gloves. And of course the gloves have blood on them. And so the screws can become contaminated. And I have yet to see one manufacturer's instruction that gives you any information on how to clean an implant that has come in contact with any blood or body fluids. As a matter of fact, they specifically recommend against it. They will tell you that if it even comes near any type of blood, that it should be discarded. So that becomes a big issue. We have blood on it, and the manufacturer is not giving us any cleaning instructions, is not giving us any sterilization instructions if it's been in contact with blood or body fluids. So now what do we do? Well, if we want to give it back to the patient, and we decide we're going to clean it, and we decide we're going to sterilize it, then we become the manufacturer. And if something happens to that patient, they get some kind of an infection or something, we're responsible. And your hospital doesn't even know you're doing this. You know, that's another thing people don't even think about, is that if your hospital doesn't know that you're doing something and something happens legally, they don't have to cover it. Your insurance company doesn't have to cover it. I remember there were, in the days of ethylene oxide, that there were many insurance companies who didn't know that the hospitals were using ethylene oxide. And when employees would get exposed to ethylene oxide or what have you, they wouldn't cover it because they said, we had no idea that you were using a hazardous chemical. So it's the same thing here. You have to make sure that, you know, if you're going to be doing something, don't assume you could just do it. And years ago, maybe that wasn't such an issue. But today, I don't know of anyone who hasn't heard about manufacturer's instructions and following them to the letter. But sometimes, you know, the technicians are in a difficult position. I remember that the patient wants it back, and everyone wants to make the patient happy. And you look at it, you say, well, it's made of metal, so why can't I not process it? Metal can be cleaned, you know, metal can be sterilized. I was even at a large teaching hospital where I was doing a consult, and I saw a femoral stem that had been sterilized. It was sitting in a paper plastic pouch. And I was horrified, and I asked, why was this processed? And the staff said, well, the surgeon wanted it sterilized so he could use it for teaching medical students. It had come out of a patient, and yet nobody thought there was anything wrong with this because, you know, we cleaned it, we sterilized it. So this is really an issue that unfortunately has been in the closet, so to speak, for a long time, and I think we really have to address it because it's really a serious issue that could have really serious implications for not only the facility, but for the patient as well.
Nancy, you've already talked about this a little bit, but I wondered if you could just kind of dive in a little bit deeper on the reason why, or the various reasons why, the OR, the physicians, the patients, whomever might ask to have these implants given back to them.
Well, because the patient wants it. And in many cases, the OR may understand that the patient's entitled to it. I mean, I've even had patients who wanted their kidney stones. They wanted their gallstones. Nobody's ever sent them to me, thank goodness. Screws and plates, it's not uncommon. And so philosophy is it's metal. What is the big deal? It's not going into another patient. We're not reusing it. So what's the harm? The harm is that you're not complying with the instructions for use. Because once the implant, as I mentioned, comes in contact with blood or body fluids, we have no validated process to render it safe. Your implantable screws and plates are single use when they're implanted or contaminated with body fluids. Furthermore, if you look at these screws, they have numerous crevices, making cleaning extremely difficult. And they should be handled using the little clips provided in the set, but as I said, that's not always being done, so we're getting more blood in them. Now, if it's an implant in a case and it hasn't come in contact with blood, they can be sterilized an indefinite number of times. I've never seen in an IFU that these implants can only be sterilized 10 times, okay? But if it comes in contact with blood or body fluids, all bets are off. So there is no way that people are following manufacturer's instructions if they are attempting to clean or re-sterilize screws and plates that have been in contact with blood or body fluids, regardless of whether it's the same patient or not.
Yeah, Nancy, you're really bringing up two topics there. And obviously the one is a focus for this interview, these implants that have been in a patient and then come back out again as an explant. But the other one, as you mentioned a couple of times, and this is something I know one of our listeners in Australia, Terry McCauley, has done some research on the impact of reprocessing on implants, but not just the impact of reprocessing, the impact of all of these other variables, such as are they getting contaminated through sizing or on the back table, you know, through any kind of cross contamination or other debris that's getting into these screw caddies, especially. But you bring up the point is if they've not been validated for that, which they haven't, then there's a real challenge there, you know. So even though I know that's not the scope of this interview, I think it's an important topic that we need more research on and more instructions, you know, really for how to deal with those situations. If we have a screw caddy that comes down with blood all in terms of sterile processing technicians, what's our next step? But again, I don't want to get us off track tonight. You just got the juices flowing here on the explant topic in particular. And I know you've spoken a lot about the FDA. Apart from the FDA, our guests may be, in addition to the things that you've already mentioned, in terms of other current industry guidance, how should sterile processing professionals approach this issue? Are there any other documents or standards out there that kind of direct on how to treat these explants?
No, unfortunately. And that's one of the reasons why I did that article, because I also get numerous emails from people, you know, how do we do this? They sent this down, they said we have to sterilize it for the patient. And the best guidance, and I'll say it again, IFUs. If it's not in the IFU, what are we doing it for? If a manufacturer does not tell us how to clean this and how to sterilize it under the conditions that they've already told you, if it comes in contact with blood and or body fluids, that it must be discarded. Well, it can't be discarded because the patient wants it. So that's what really led us to come up with our policy and our system, working with our health department and coming up with what was the safest method to give it back to the patient so that we were taking care of the patient's needs, but still protecting the patient and our facility from any liability. We then went into getting a multidisciplinary team, and we had infection prevention, obviously risk management, because, you know, they're the ones that have to show up in court, the sterile processing in the operating room, and we sat down and we discussed all the pros and the cons. We brought in the IFUs, we showed it to them, and we developed our procedure. In our procedure, it clearly stated that SPD should not be processing any device without written instructions from the device manufacturer. Any noncompliance would put the facility at risk. Then we went on to say that explanted implants cannot be effectively cleaned and or sterilized as they were not intended for reuse. Immediate use sterilization or other methods are not to be used. Check with your state or local regulations, which may also apply. If the patient wishes to have their implant returned to them after surgery, the implant should be wiped off with sterile water in the OR and placed in a biohazard bag. It can then be given to the patient. So now the patient has been notified that it's in a biohazard bag. What they do with it when they get home is up to them. But we cannot do anything beyond that because we have no way to make it safe for the patient. And to give it to them would be giving them a false sense of security.
That's fantastic information. So one thing that I think a lot of our listeners are probably wondering is that in the heat of the moment where the, you know, everything is going crazy in the OR like it does every day, and, you know, the surgeon looks you square in the face and says, you know, why won't you reprocess this? Or the OR screaming at you because the surgeon wants it. Can you give our listeners some tips on how to answer those types of questions?
Yes. First of all, you know, when you have a policy that is requiring a change in people's behavior, and change is a word that nobody likes, you have to have some type of education. You can't just, you know, all of a sudden announce to a surgeon, patient can't have it back because SPD won't let us. We're out of the picture as far as I'm concerned. Sterile processing is out of the picture. This is an OR issue only. The OR should not be sending it down to SPD. So what we have to do, we collaborate and develop the policy, and then the operating room has to in-service it to their surgeons and to, and I mean, you know, mainly is really the orthopedic surgeons and their staff. And in sterile processing, we in-service the sterile processing staff that if for some reason these implants find their way down here, you need to send them back, and you need to let the educator or whoever would be the person in charge in the operating room that they need to follow the policy. This is why policies are so important. When you have a policy, you're not going to have chaos. But the policy has to be distributed to people. People need to know that it exists, and then people need to follow it. And I have to tell you, once we implemented our policy, we never had a problem again. We never saw another screw or plate again.
So, Nancy, you know, even giving the explant back to the patient, the other thing that always comes up to me that's kind of an unanswered question is, how would the DOT view that as far as Do they regulate the way people transport personal items back and even giving it back to the patient in a biohazard bag? You know, there's so many additional considerations. It really highlights the need for the manufacturer to really weigh in on this, does it not?
Well, again, you know, it becomes a legal issue too, because the patient could, you know, really bring a case against the hospital and say, I paid for it, I want it back. So the hospital's caught in the middle. I really seriously doubt the manufacturer is going to give any more guidance than they can, because, as you know, manufacturers are very concerned about liability on their end. They can't control what's going to happen to the device once the patient gets it, and neither can we. And that's why our decision was made with our health department to put it in the biohazard bag. You know, they wiped it off. I mean, it's the patient's own blood. It's the patient's own tissue. But we're taking that extra precaution, cleaning it off, you know, having them clean it off in the OR with some sterile water, and then putting it in a biohazard bag. In some cases, it has to go to the lab. We at our facility, sometimes it has to go to the lab for whatever reason, but it's in the biohazard bag. When it comes back in the bag, the OR gives it to the patient. After that, it's up to the patient. You're not transporting someone else's biohazardous material, so our health department did not have a problem with the policy that we developed. But that's why my recommendation in the article was that you check with your state or local, you know, regulations to see if that would be a problem or not.
Yeah, and I should have defined DOT. It's the Department of Transportation for the listeners.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. For those that aren't familiar. And I guess the last thing is, you know, is just kind of throwing out a couple of things that I feel like are opportunities in the industry to improve. But I'm not sure that all implants have to have a process to be validated by the FDA to be explanted. So, you know, you just had talked about that. You're not sure that the manufacturer's necessarily going to do that, because, or not necessarily that, but the manufacturer's not necessarily going to give us additional instructions because that may open them up to liability. But, you know, we watched that movie on Netflix, The Bleeding Edge, and, you know, there's a perfect example of something that was implanted and the manufacturer had no idea and had no instructions for explanting the device if the patient no longer wanted it. And I almost feel like there's a gap in the process there that really should be addressed as well in the industry.
I agree. The FDA has their regulations. They do not define what happens to the explanted implant because, again, they're dependent on people following what is existing in the IFUs, and that's what we use as the basis for our policy. I know ASTM, the American Society of Testing and Materials, they have quite a few standards on implants and materials and what have you, but even they do not have anything in terms of reprocessing them. And again, it's because there's too many variables. And if you do give reprocessing instructions, you know there's going to be places that will start saying, oh, well, I've got bloody screws here. They gave me instructions. I'm just going to clean them. That would be terrible if we did that. That would be absolutely terrible. I mean, implants are at another level where I think we really have to take a lot of caution.
Yep, great point. And you have done an amazing job with this interview. And I have just one sort of last question, and really to provide direction to the listeners. But is there some sort of a policy template that's available out there, or maybe some specific industry recommendations and guidelines that we can direct them to as they try to develop their own policies?
What we did here in New Jersey was, you know, I did all the research. I went on the FDA webpage and, you know, I read you, they have quite a bit on implants and what constitutes an implant and when they can come out and what have you. And then we looked at manufacturer's instructions from all the different implant companies that we dealt with in our facility, just to make sure that, you know, they all said the same thing, which they did, that if it came in contact with your blood or body fluids, that it could not be reprocessed and it had to be disposed of. And then we went to our health department and we consulted with them and said, look, this is an issue. We have learned from legal, the patient has the right to have it. And, you know, we're concerned about, you know, just giving a bloody thing to the patient saying, here, take it home in a little bag. I mean, that's kind of gross. So what can we do to protect ourselves and the patient? And that's where they said, you, sterile processing, should never be involved with this. It's an operating room situation, and they need to handle it. So that's where we came up with, collaboratively with our facility and with the health department, to have them clean it off so at least there was no visible blood. And again, we're not talking about, we're just talking about in a little, you know, the little basin with the sterile water and the gauze, then putting it in a Ziploc bag that is biohazard. And that's it. It's the end of the story. Really have to work with their state and local, start within their facility first, and they've got to have that multidisciplinary committee. They've got to have risk management and infection prevention involved, because they're the two key players in this.
I love how in-depth that whole review process was for your multidisciplinary team, and also the fact that you did such an amazing job of really carving out the line and just saying, hey, listen, this department is based on having these instructions, and without them, this department can't be involved. That was really a great way to just draw, you know, a very clear line, not just for your team, but for everybody on that disciplinary team and hospital leadership as well. Nicely done. And another fantastic interview on Beyond Clean here, Nancy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That was Nancy Chobin, president of Sterile Processing University, LLC. And we talked about policies about explant reprocessing and touched upon a few other gaps in the industry. Quite frankly, Hank, she's done an exhaustive amount of work on really figuring all of this out, and yet I feel like the industry needs to do more to just expand on those policies and guidelines and really just tell everybody in sterile processing how to do it. But as Nancy said, we may never see that day.
That's right, Justin. And unfortunately, this is not a new issue. It's one that's been around for a number of years, as long as we've been explanting and as long as patients have been asking for those explants back. There's been sterile processing technicians having to make these decisions. So hopefully this episode equips some of those folks today to go back, create that multidisciplinary team, contact your Department of Health, really get a thorough look into the best practice to make this as safe as possible if you're deciding to give these implants back to the patients. I think she gave us some great insights. And as a reminder, on the show notes for this episode, we're going to link to the article that Nancy wrote in Infection Control Today that highlights a lot of these issues, and that's another great read.
Fantastic, Hank. That's going to do it for this week's show. You can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes or Stitcher and Google Play or Spotify. Simply search for Beyond Clean Podcast. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review, because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.